Welcome back to the DBM Strategy Call, everyone. Each week, Part 1 sees us review the macroeconomic and geopolitical levels as relevant to the running of a digital assets-based business. A look at the media headlines this week, and you'd think the global economy was on the brink of collapse, again. The Middle East ceasefire is being used as a smokescreen as ships burn in the Strait of Hormuz, and oil fields are being threatened with seizure. Yet, if you looked at your portfolio, you probably noticed the market barely even blinked. For those paying attention at this level, it feels like we're living in parallel universes right now.
It really does, John, and that is the story of the week. The temporary truce between the U.S. and Iran, which had briefly reopened the Strait of Hormuz and sent oil tumbling, completely unraveled on Tuesday. We saw both sides trade their heaviest strikes since June. And yet, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ still hit another winning week. Stocks were completely insulated by a massive $26.5 billion chip IPO and more AI optimism. Let's break this down, starting with the cold hard numbers on the macro front.
Yes, the S&P 500 rose about 1%, and the NASDAQ jumped by 1.5%. But it wasn't a universal green screen. The Dow actually slipped by 0.6%. What we saw was a distinct rotation, capital moving right back out of traditional blue chips and aggressively returning to tech.
Which is wild, because the week actually started with pure euphoria. On Monday, the Dow closed above 53,000 for the first time in its history. Tesla was up 7%, and the Magnificent Seven names bounced hard off the prior week's sell-off. We even had Trump in his typical game show mode ringing the opening bell remotely from the Oval Office, using the market's run as ultimate validation that his economic agenda is working perfectly.
Right, but underneath that surface-level index growth, the broader AI trade stayed incredibly jittery. Tech insiders are definitely buying. In fact, a record number of corporate tech insiders have bought their own stock over the past 6 months, showing they still see massive value. Take Meta, for example. It climbed 6% on Friday and 15% on the week after Bank of America flagged that its AI infrastructure costs might be half of what Wall Street originally feared. But despite those bright spots, chip stocks whipsawed all week. The broader tech sector is actually sitting about 10% below its recent peak, meaning this index rally has narrowed to just a small handful of heavyweights.
It was a quiet week for data, but the market is still digesting the weak U.S. jobs print from the prior Thursday, only 57,000 payrolls added. According to the CME Fed Watch tool, traders are now pricing in a 61% chance of a September rate hike. It's a complete paradox. Soft economic growth data isn't forcing the Federal Reserve to cut rates. Instead, it's coexisting with hike bets because inflation is still stubbornly sticky above 3%. Fed Chair Warsh has made price stability his singular, hawkish focus. The June FOMC minutes released on Wednesday didn't do much to change that narrative.
Okay, now let's pivot to the geopolitics, because by Tuesday, that initial Monday euphoria evaporated. Drones struck three commercial ships in the Strait of Hormuz on Monday and Tuesday, including a Qatari LNG tanker bound for India. The U.S. launched heavy retaliatory strikes on Iranian targets Tuesday and Wednesday. Trump, speaking from a NATO summit in Turkey, officially declared the truce over, called negotiating with Tehran a waste of time, and even floated the idea of the U.S. seizing Iran's critical Karg Island oil terminal.
Iran's response was immediate, threatening to close the strait entirely and warning of overwhelming force. The U.S. Treasury then promptly canceled its authorization for Iran to sell oil. But here's the fascinating part for investors. This is the fourth separate escalate, then de-escalate cycle we've seen in the 4 months since this conflict began. The pattern has become so familiar that the market treats each successive flare-up with less panic than the last.
Exactly. Look at how oil reacted. Brent crude nudged 5.2% on Tuesday to $78.02, and WTI rose 4.4% to $73.52. as tanker traffic through the strait ground down to roughly 13% of its normal capacity. But crude never got anywhere near its highs of $120. By Friday, Brent eased back under $77 and WTI fell to around $71 as Trump softened his rhetoric, stating he didn't think the two nations would return to full-scale war. The market has decided that targeted strikes on boats and radar sites are a containable, localized risk, not a systemic global supply shock.
In fact, the real showstopper that kept the market afloat wasn't geopolitical. It was the SK Hynix IPO. The South Korean memory chip giant made its NASDAQ debut on Friday, pricing at $149, opening at $170, and popping 17%. They raised a staggering $26.5 billion. To put that in perspective, SK Hynix is a critical NVIDIA supplier and the world's largest producer of the high-bandwidth memory, HBM, that feeds AI accelerators. This is now the largest U.S. listing ever by a foreign company. Following closely behind recent listings from SpaceX and Cerebras, it proves institutional capital cannot get enough AI silicon. The only downside? It's sucking the air out of the room for domestic competitors. Micron slipped during the debut, showing a widening chasm between AI winners and losers.
And while traditional tech is concentrating, crypto quietly had its best week in months. Bitcoin shook off all the Middle East volatility entirely, trading around $63,900 on Friday, up about 3% on the week and hitting its highest in a month. Ethereum followed suit, climbing 2% to near $1,800.
And the underlying capital flows back that up. U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs snapped a brutal 10-day outflow streak, pulling in a massive $221.7 million haul in a single day, their biggest daily inflow in 2 months. A lot of this institutional appetite is returning because sentiment around the pending Clarity Act is steadily improving. From a technical view, the $58,000 zone remains rock-solid support, and the bulls are eyes on the prize to reclaim $66,560 as the next support level.
Looking to this week, it's all eyes on earnings and macro. Big bank earnings kick off on Tuesday, giving us the first authentic look at credit conditions and consumer spending. Then we get ASML and TSMC later in the week. Any supply chain hiccups there will shake the AI tree. But the crown jewel will be midweek June CPI update. If cheap oil from the ceasefire period successfully pull down inflation, those September Fed hike bets will melt away, giving equities major room to run. If it prints hot, the hawkish Warsh narrative gets dialed up to 11.
And with all this mainstream data and narrative said, it is worth reminding listeners of the deeper level we prefer to assess in DBM, a macro framework that directly refutes mainstream financial reporting as smoke and mirrors, as the theater distracts the masses, while in reality, the world is shifting to a new era where sound money shifts the balance towards informed owners.
Absolutely, Sarah. When looking at the past week's news, another volatile collapses of Middle East peace, oil price spikes, tech market rotations, and the sudden institutional embrace of Bitcoin ETFs, our deeper analysis provides a clearer picture as to what is really going on. Many of these events are not random geopolitical tragedies or organic market mechanics. They are manufactured crises, geopolitical theater, and calculated posturing to control capital flows during a historic global transition.
The analysis shows the structural shift from the military-industrial complex, MIC, to the financial-industrial complex, FIC, as coined by macro analyst and Bitcoin OG Simon Dixon.
The theater of mainstream media and their paymasters frames the escalating drone strikes in the Strait of Hormuz as a traditional MIC conflict over physical geography and oil. However, closing the Strait of Hormuz requires quiet structural cooperation between dominant global entities, including Western powers, local actors, and institutional bodies like Lloyd's of London, who control maritime insurance lines. The reality of the market barely blinking at the death of a ceasefire isn't apathy. It is an acknowledgement that the global control grid has shifted. Power is no longer exclusively maintained by the petrodollar controlling physical, geographically located pipelines with force. Now, global order is managed by controlling capital allocation, debt issuance, and data infrastructure. The physical flare-ups are treated as cyclical volatility windows to recalibrate asset values rather than systemic threats as we once knew them.
While the S&P 500 and NASDAQ push toward all-time highs on the back of historic events like the $26.5 billion SK Hynix IPO, This simply highlights a predatory mechanism occurring beneath the surface index numbers in two main ways. One, stock as sovereign currency. Mega cap companies are utilizing their massive valuations as a form of private money printing, referred to as an equity ATM. When a giant like SpaceX or a major AI hardware player achieves a $1 trillion valuation, they can issue equity to acquire smaller tech competitors on a whim. Two, the asset stripping effect. If a smaller tech innovator's stock declines during a market correction, the monolithic corporations acquire them using their own highly inflated shares. This concentrates intellectual property and AI infrastructure into a few hyper-monopolies, under the guise of healthy market consolidation, effectively asset stripping smaller innovators who compete for the same institutional capital.
Indeed, and as ever, the market makers ensure the retail-level person is shaken out along the way. The current geopolitical narrative pitches the U.S. and China as mortal enemies locked in a cold war over technology, evidenced by the rush for AI silicon, TSMC dependencies, and trade restrictions. Stripping away this narrative, in fact, exposes a deeply integrated financial reality. First, we have the symbiotic elite. Despite the public political posturing and alarmist media narrative, the heads of Western tech and finance regularly meet directly with foreign leadership, such as Xi Jinping in Beijing. Behind closed doors, trade-offs are structurally engineered. Western tech giants secure access to rare earth minerals and manufacturing hubs, while foreign state networks integrate into payment rails to collect transactional fees. Then we have the controlled rug pull. The Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the People's Bank of China, and the Bank for International Settlements, IBS, ultimately co-manage the broader liquidity cycles. The public theater of geopolitical conflict, immigration, and the latest terrorist attack provides plausible deniability for politicians to blame foreign adversaries for domestic issues, like persistent 3%+ inflation or weak job growth. While central banking institutions quietly build out central bank digital currencies and heavily regulated tokenized asset frameworks ahead of the next Bretton Woods, dollar shock, or decimalization moment.
And all the while, inside of this managed transition to global capital is Bitcoin's shift from sovereign money to Wall Street instrument. The past week saw spot Bitcoin ETFs snap a 10-day outflow streak with a massive $221.7 million daily haul, coinciding with positive sentiment around the Clarity Act. While traditional crypto media celebrates this as organic institutional adoption, this can also be viewed through the lens of systematic institutional co-optation. We see the tokenization trap for what it is, as the establishment is attempting to aggressively shift Bitcoin and crypto away from self-sovereign on-chain ownership toward a tokenized Wall Street asset model. Under this structure, major institutional custodians hold the actual underlying Bitcoin, while the investor merely holds a digital representation or an ETF share.
The goal of which is to create a paradigm where you own nothing and are happy, converting a disruptive decentralized asset into a highly financialized tool captured within the legacy banking ecosystem. The institutional inflows are a concerted effort to absorb the circulating supply of digital assets before the broader monetary reset. This recent pullback in the price of Bitcoin may be less about a four-year cycle this time and more about institutions working to shake out the perpetually naive Bitcoiners. Those informed and aware of this, of course, maintain the discipline of DCA and holding Bitcoin privately over time.
The lesson of the past week's market performance is that chaos is a regulatory and financial tool. Whether it is the theatrical escalation of regional wars to mask domestic monetary mismanagement, or the manic inflation of AI assets to absorb global liquidity, the elite institutions of the financial industrial complex leverage these cycles to consolidate wealth, strip assets from the people, and prepare the global infrastructure for a highly centralized, multipolar financial future.
As we see it, our job is to recognize this and be astute and patient enough to accumulate sound money in line with the market makers before holding long enough to ride up the cycle in line with the next macro cycle. In 2026, we see an opportunity to do this at this GEO level gears up, plus our knowledge of inevitable prior Bitcoin cycles. See the image in the show notes.
Fascinating, John. And on top of this, the DBM model, nurtured over recent years, also provides participants a fighting chance to consolidate our startup investment decision into liquidity events that massively accelerate our ability to accrue Bitcoin ahead of this run-up. So whether you simply have the discipline and means to DCA Bitcoin each month or are in position to consolidate liquidity events, you may be one step ahead of the macro-level shenanigans we've lived with most of our lives.
Here's to it, Sarah. Hence, we prioritize part two, the DBM strategy call, every Monday, 11 a.m. UTC, where we focus on the specifics of what we can affect as we manage our digital asset factories, stay safe, and prepare for project vesting and yields you've created. See the show notes for access, and see you next time.